can see the Cybertruck highlighted there. So through extensive surveillance video, we were able to track him leaving there, and we know that he went to several different places along Las Vegas Boulevard, and he spent some time in a parking lot of a business near Flamingo and Las Vegas Boulevard. We didn't have a video of the truck pulling back onto Las Vegas Boulevard from the Sands. You see that there? That's north on the boulevard from Sands at 8:39, where he then immediately heads to the Trump Hotel, pulls into the valet area, and as of course you all know, the explosion occurs within 17 seconds of his arrival at the valet.
That was the shooting in Las Vegas. That was the attempted terrorist attack in Las Vegas. And a description of the Cybertruck, which we're going to talk about. We know now that the driver was a military activist, a special forces guy, 17 years. What's this all about? His name was Matthew Leivelsberger. We're going to talk about that today, and also Shamsuddin Jobar, who, you know, killed, what, 14 victims, ran them over on the sidewalk in New Orleans. Is there a connection between these two attacks? Was it really Matthew Leivelsberger, whose family says that he was a patriot and liked Trump? Really? What's going on here? We're going to discuss it with one of my favorite national security experts, Mike Waller, as you stay tuned for today's edition. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. And I want you to know you can call us at 662-821-2040 and leave us a message, and we will look to try to use that on the air, but we love to listen. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any social media platform. And you can listen to the podcast on any podcast platform, whether it's afr.net, our home base, my website, sandyrios.com, or Spotify, Amazon, Apple, wherever your podcast choice resides. Well, it's the first of the year, and I'm so grateful that we are still able to work with preborn because they're my favorite. They are the way to save babies from my perspective. I want to tell you about one of the moms. Her name is Deanna, and she already had 8 children and was in a really bad marriage. The thought of another child was more than she could bear. She tried to order the abortion pill, but by God's design, it never came. At 18 weeks along, Deanna visited a preborn network clinic. And while getting her sonogram, her baby waved at her. Then she remembered that this was the baby that she had asked God for. God saved her baby that day, but he also saved her. Well, that's a kind of in a nutshell the work of preborn, saving babies and their moms. And if you want to help in this new year, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right, so stay tuned for this edition, this really interesting edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
The FBI team and our law enforcement partners here are also reviewing hundreds of hours of surveillance and other video from both the French Quarter and other locations. As for a timeline, at this point, investigators believe Jobar picked up the rented F-150 in Houston, Texas on December 30th. He then drove from Houston to New Orleans on the evening of the 31st, and he posted several videos to an online platform proclaiming his support for ISIS. There were 5 videos posted on Jabbar's Facebook account, which are time-stamped beginning at 1:29 a.m. and the last at 3:02 a.m. In the first video, Jobar explains he originally planned to harm his family and friends, but was concerned the news headlines would not focus on the, quote, war between the believers and the disbelievers, end quote. Additionally, he stated he had joined ISIS before this summer. He also provided a will and testament.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was an update after the disaster that took place on Bourbon Street in New Orleans a few days ago. And as I'm speaking to you, 14 people lost their lives. They were plowed down by that truck that went down the sidewalk at record speeds, that heavy truck that just murdered people indiscriminately. And 30 to 35 people have been injured. It's a terrible tragedy, and we're learning more about the driver, Shamsuddin Jabbar. But there is so much to understand about this. I've asked my good friend Mike Waller to join us. Now, he's more than my good friend. He is a national security expert, international, national, and he's just, I just am very grateful he's able to join us this morning because he'll bring some really good understanding and also the latest on what's happening in the investigation. We're going to talk about the New Orleans investigation, also the one in Las Vegas. So we'll talk about both of those things. Mike is with Center for Security Policy, and he joins us this morning. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Sandy.
All right, what do we know? That FBI report right there tells us that Shamsuddin Jabbar was making it known that he was a jihadist online. So how could that have been missed?
It all depends on what the FBI and the other security apparatus told to look for. Certainly, they were using resources of social media companies to spy on people like you and me, and it seems like nobody made it a priority to monitor what the jihadists are saying publicly.
Yeah. Well, and of course, the thing that makes this more complicated is, and I do want you to tell us what I know some things, but you know a lot of things. Shamsuddin Jabbar ends up being a member of an American citizen and part of the American military. Can you just tell us about that?
Yeah, this is not uncommon. It seems to be fitting a pattern, which we saw several years ago with Major Nidal Hassan shooting up his fellow soldiers at Fort Hood. And President Obama called it workplace violence. So you had this radical Islamic extremism being pushed through our military for years now. It goes back, actually, to the Clinton administration and continued through the George W. Bush administration, where the Muslim Brotherhood was given full authority to recruit and vet imams to serve as Muslim chaplains within the U.S. military. So we've really got to take a look at, are these Muslim chaplains, they're all Muslim Brotherhood approved, within our military, responsible for the radicalization of our military personnel?
Yeah. Mike, I want to just say one thing so people will know. I actually first met you when I was getting a briefing on this situation about the Muslim Brotherhood. It's I think it was back, I came to D.C. in 2001, and the attack on the Pentagon and on New York had just happened. So we were just learning, at least I was. Would you say that in 2001 you were an expert on the Muslim Brotherhood?
No, I was just getting involved then. I had begun following them shortly prior to this because the Clinton administration was pushing radical Islamic groups. I had been more involved in the Soviet and the communist left-wing space. But when I saw those same elements working with these Muslim elements, I became really interested in, whoa, how does this work? And found out that the Muslim Brotherhood was then working with the American far left.
You know, one thing just for perspective also, when I first, 2001, I'll speak for myself, and I bet you'd echo this, I couldn't even pronounce their names. I knew very little about, when I was at CWA, we worked with Muslims at the UN because they were pro-life and pro, traditional marriage. So we found common ground, and that's really pretty much all I knew. And so because of you and your comrades at Center for Security Policy, I was brought up to speed about this. But here's what I remember. Correct me if I'm wrong. The FBI was all over this right after 9/11, and I felt like we were on a mission, you know, to take care of this problem. But it didn't take long, just a few months, actually, when I was actually on CNN, Crossfire, debating whether our kids in public schools should be taught about Islamophobia. It only took about 4 months, Mike, before that happened. And suddenly the Muslim Brotherhood and the whole notion of what Islam teaches, we were not allowed to say that. Everything changed.
Right.
That's, yeah, and it happened quickly.
Right, that's exactly how it was. It happened while the Pentagon was still burning. It was immediate. The Muslim Brotherhood's immediate concern on 9/11, on the afternoon of September 11, 2001, was how do we make sure our networks are not ripped up? How can we point fingers at others, and how can we push regular Americans to not criticize us, not even look at what we're doing, not even be able to ask questions about what we're doing? And that's precisely what the Muslim Brotherhood did, and they did it in conjunction with the George W. Bush administration.
Oh, how well I remember. And I just one point, because this is all foreign information for people. Mike, here we are. What? We know this is going to come back to bite us, and now it's coming back to bite us in a big way. But the FBI had uncovered in the Holy Land Foundation case, they had the actual treatise of how the Muslim Brotherhood was going to destroy this country, and that happened in the 90s, right?
Right. That was back when the FBI was really doing its job on this kind of thing. They didn't have a lot of resources to do it, but they did the job, and they did it really well. They were curious. They were open-minded. They were just a sponge for new information. And then under Robert Mueller, right around 2003, 2004, it started to put the brakes on. And by 2006, 2007, it was shut down.
Well, of course, Obama won the White House, and he took it. George W. Bush, I think, was just completely misled by people that thought Muslims would make a great, great constituents for the Republican Party, and it would give them another constituent, and just blindly pushing that. But I think Barack Obama, of course, was not blind about it. In fact, I want to play a couple of clips while we're talking, Mike, and let me just start with this one since we've gone back so far. This was President Trump, first of all, making the comment that Barack Obama started ISIS, and then followed by a clip by Obama talking about his role in actually maybe doing that. Let's listen to that. This is clip 7.
ISIS is honoring President Obama. He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS, okay? He's the founder. He founded ISIS. And I would say the co-founder would be crooked Hillary Clinton.
All right, so people, when he said that, always think he's crazy. But generally, when he makes these outrageous claims, they turn out to be true. And so I just want to play this clip before Mike can explain more about this. This is clip 8, and this is President Obama kind of explaining how he founded ISIS. Here it is.
Was moving too slowly, but the fall of Ramadi has galvanized the Iraqi government. So with the additional steps I ordered last month, we're speeding up training of ISIL forces, including volunteers from Sunni tribes in Anbar province.
We're speeding up training of ISIL forces. Mike, explain that. Can you explain that?
Well, ISIL is the same as ISIS. It was Obama's pet term for ISIS. Without saying ISIS, there are academic reasons for using each one, but he deliberately chose that term, and he used it in a way that your average person would not pick up what you just picked up on that clip. So he set up all the circumstances for these jihadists to reconvene under a different kind of umbrella. Now it's not an organized top-down structure. Now it's an atomized structure. Anyone in the world can declare that they are part of that movement, commit terrorists in their name, and then that movement will accept those terrorist acts as their own. So he sort of franchised out this jihadism, which previously had been top-down and had a central command and control.
All right, so back to Shamsuddin Jabbar, who was the guy who drove that truck. What do we know about him, Mike, about his military? And you want to say a word about his military experience? Why that was, yeah, just talk about that if you can.
Sure. He was an IT and human resources person within the U.S. Army. He left with the rank of staff sergeant. served in Afghanistan around 2007, 2008, and then came back and became, we don't know when and where he became radicalized yet, and there's still a question of whether his Islamic name is indeed his birth name, but his army pictures show that he had already changed, had his, the name Jabbar as his surname while he was still serving in the military. One of the things to watch about him is how did he become radicalized? And if you look at where the FBI was searching his home in Houston, it's in a Muslim area of Houston, but it's just a few hundred feet away from a mosque that is owned by the North American Islamic Trust, NAIT. NAIT is the Muslim Brotherhood's corporate entity for owning the deeds of Muslim Brotherhood-controlled mosques in this country. So we know this was a radicalized mosque. And if you look at the mosque's website now, it's the Masjid Mosque in Houston. It says there that if the FBI calls you, to call CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is another Muslim Brotherhood front group and happens to be at a federal court found that CARE is Hamas.
Yeah, so this, you know, I didn't actually, there's no way we can talk about everything, but I did not say that during the time we were describing when Islamophobia suddenly sprung up as a word, and suddenly we couldn't feel like offended that Muslims had attacked our country, we couldn't say anything bad about them, and we, at some point in that, Michael, the CARE was revealed to be what it was, a spokesperson for the Muslim Brotherhood. And they were, I don't know if they were labeled a terrorist organization, but they were banned from media. And then suddenly that all changed. And now they're just fine. And they appear on television and have, you know, have a place in Congress. I mean, in the sense of walking the halls and lobbying. Was that during the Obama years?
It really began with legitimacy during the Bush 43 years after 9/11, where CARE came out to define itself as the Muslim civil rights organization representing all Muslims. And of course it doesn't. It represents the Muslim Brotherhood. And most American Muslims are afraid of the Muslim Brotherhood. But they're not going to speak out and they're not going to criticize.
One interesting thing, Mike, you know, when President Obama was president, of course, the first address he gave to the world was to the Muslim world, apologizing for, I guess, what America had done to Muslims. And he flew over there and did this grand speech. And then the Arab Spring, he coined it, began. But the Arab Spring, curiously, always was about support of Muslim Brotherhood groups of Muslims, not the others.
Exactly. Yeah. It was all about overthrowing Arab governments that were friendly to us, or at least where we had good working relationships with us, like Tunisia, like Egypt, you know, the largest, most populous Arab country. This is what Obama was doing, was overthrowing friendly Arab governments and replacing them with a Muslim Brotherhood regime. Luckily, they were fought back.
Well, they are the most brutal. I wish I'd pulled it. I saw a guy in full Arab dress, the white robe and the band around his head from United Arab Emirates. And he's very eloquent. And he's saying, you know, we've tried to tell the West, the Muslim Brotherhood, that's what they do. They kill. They kill us. They kill everyone. They are not representative of, that's what they're saying, of Islam. And we can't get the West to designate them as a terrorist organization. And that is curious, Mike. Why even under
That's
Trump?
Right.
Did Trump declare it a terrorist organization?
No, he did not. In fact, we called him on him to do this several times when he was president before, and where we've called on him to do it again now. We've actually written up the language and shown the operative laws and regulations that would allow him to do so. So we'll see what he ends up doing. You've got a guy like Sebastian Gorka who's going to be heading the counterterrorism program on the National Security Council staff, and Seb knows the Muslim Brotherhood inside and out.
You know, you were talking about that mosque. We should talk about that a little bit more because it's the Masjid Bilal. Masjid Bilal. And a missive went out to members of that mosque saying, if anyone's contacted by the media, it is very important that you do not respond. If approached by the FBI, please refer to CARE and the Islamic Society of Greater Houston. Maybe you said that and I missed it. But they were instructing their members to shut up about it. And you're saying that this guy was a member of that mosque, or were you just assuming that?
Well, we don't know yet. Nobody has said anything yet. But you see, the mosque has not denounced him, has it?
No. No, they haven't.
The mosque has not said this guy was not a member of our congregation. And instead, the mosque has gone in full defensive censorship mode, saying you can only speak through Muslim Brotherhood voices. You speak through CARE, or you speak through, you just said, the Islamic Society of Houston, which is a unit of the Islamic Society of North America, which is a front for the Muslim Brotherhood. So this is all complete narrative control that they're under. They're on full defense mode, which to me looks like they're really, really guilty.
Yeah, it does. It looks terrible. And nobody's been minding the store because we all know that. But this has been happening for a long time, where terrorists have been given a pass, and American citizens who are military veterans. Remember when the Army listed, or the Southern Poverty Law Center mentioned Army veterans as part of the white supremacist domestic terrorist group? Do you remember that, Mike?
Right. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And the President Biden repeatedly said that white supremacism is the single greatest terrorist threat in the United States. And FBI Director Chris Wray has said the same thing.
Yes, and Milley, remember, they testified before Congress on that. And just to make our point, we've got to Biden actually saying that. That is clip six. Let's listen.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland today. Not ISIS, not Al-Qaeda, white supremacists.
Yeah. So this is, and now, you know, they've been getting away with this, Mike. I mean, some of us, we conservatives have been talking about it, but I don't think the rest of the culture is just now waking up to this. It's really tragic.
They've been getting away with murder, and you can literally slaughter American citizens, but you can't talk about the Muslim Brotherhood or else you're a bigot.
Exactly. Well, that's right. But the things are beginning to change, thank God.
Look at our Wikipedia page, Sandy. I don't recommend that people normally do it, but on the Center for Security Policy, our organization, the Wikipedia has locked it down, so we cannot change the falsehoods that are in that thing. But it says right in the first thing, the Center for Security Policy is an anti-Muslim, you know, hate group or whatever it says now. And we've tried for years. I even talked to Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia, about it. And we were unable to get that stuff removed and to put the factual stuff in. So it's been Wikipedia, or Wikimedia Foundation, has locked down that page so the changes can't be made. This is to ensure there's a constant narrative to destroy anyone who exposes what the Muslim Brotherhood's doing.
Yes, I've been down that path myself. I mean, I had the same thing when I was in D.C. and on television a lot and talking about Islam a lot. I paid a price myself. And you know, you remember probably I was on the list of Women Against Islam for the SPLC. And they did likenesses of us and didn't give our street address, but talked about where it was really basically an intifada against us. So, Yes, this is what they do.
I remember very clearly, and Concerned Women for America became a hate group, if I remember right.
Yes, we did. Yes, we became an American Family Association. I moved to a different hate group, American Family Association. And I want to say, this is not funny, just back to the Army and the Muslim chaplains. In addition to that, I well remember, Mike, when the Army was training its soldiers. Well, let me just back up. After the Fort Hood incident with Nidal Hassan, how he murdered, he was a doctor in the military, for those of you who don't remember this, and he stood up on a desk and shot, murdered all these unarmed soldiers on the base, just turned against them. I think he was a psychiatrist. And of course, he was a jihadi. So at the time, I was on the air for AFA doing the morning show. And I got a lot of calls from Fort Hood, Mike. People, I think I can say this now without getting him in trouble. The photographer who took all the photos used to keep in touch with me. And people would call me on the air and talk about it. And then they shut that down. The military shut that down. And the next thing I remember was that AFA was in their training manuals and in their training of soldiers. I saw a video of this. AFA was listed as a hate group that they couldn't have anything to do with. I want to paint the picture so people will understand this. So,
sure. Yeah, very similar. I had a similar experience where I was working on doing a pre-deployment orientation and training program for the Army as their units would go to Iraq and Afghanistan. And I did the psychological operations and information operations module. There was somebody else who did the how to understand Islam module. And he was a very nice guy. And but he acted really weird. And I talked to two of the Afghans who were in our group. These were Afghans on how our soldiers can understand different cultures within Afghanistan, so how you can deal with them and the really horrible things you're going to see and how you have to get accustomed to it. They were excellent to help our troops. But the guy who did how to understand Islam, he was a Syrian exile, very nice guy. But it was so skewed, and he had this way of saying it. This was one time in Alabama, and it was mostly Southern Baptist soldiers. He was National Guard. He could read who these guys were, and he said, "Really, Islam is basically the Bible, where Jesus is a great prophet, but Muhammad is the following prophet." And so he gave biblical roots to Islam, and it was like, "Oh, gee, we didn't know that." Well, thing is, that guy, and we always thought his name was Louis Safi, and then I realized, no, it's Loue. Well, Loue Safi is a Muslim Brotherhood guy. He's a top Syrian Muslim Brotherhood militant. And so I went and I reported this, because when you go on base, these are not classified sessions, but you can meet everybody on base. You're seeing all the officers and all the senior non-commissioned officers. You can see their names. You can see all their other insignia. You can see what their MOS is. So you know who the intelligence guy is and who the signals guy is and who all of these people are. Muslim Brotherhood can see all of this at each base pre-deployment, right before they go off to Iraq and Afghanistan. So I reported this quietly to the lead contracting officer, who was a retired colonel, and they let me go. I was told very discreetly by other people in the system who agreed with me, but they were going to lose their livelihood if they said anything. They said, "Mike, they've decided not to ask you back. They're not going to fire you because they know you'll make mistakes, so they just won't ask you back." And that's precisely what happened. And it happened at Fort Hood 3 weeks after the shooting. Because what tipped me off on this was Loue Safi went and donated cash to the Islamic groups at Fort Hood as a way of showing charity in the aftermath of the shooting.
So this is disgusting. And Mike, you're not the only person that happened to. There's many of our friends also got dismissed and removed for speaking the truth about Islam. This is the purge that went on. So the military was taken care of by Muslim chaplains and changing the training and vilifying and calling people hate groups that were actually people that love this country and Christians. But the FBI also went through its purge. They purged all the manuals. So you wonder why the FBI agents speaking in New Orleans is so stupid, excuse me, because she hasn't a clue. She hasn't a clue. She wasn't trained on this because they took care of them also.
See the DEI, you're talking about the FBI assistant
Alethea,
special agent in charge with the nose ring?
Yes, Alethea Duncan.
Yes, the nose ring one. She's a healthcare crime person. She knows nothing about any of this. She's the one who came right out, and they couldn't bring out the special agent in charge because he's even a worse clown, another DEI hire, and the FBI knows it, so they brought her out. But look at how she made her statements. She made every statement, you know, intoning her sentences at the end as if each thing was a question. She obviously had no idea what she's talking about. And then when the mayor of New Orleans said this is a terrorist incident, and then she gets up as the FBI person says it was not a terrorist incident.
A few
hours later, she takes out her nose ring to go to a news conference to contradict what she had previously said.
Oh, and then you got Ann Kirkpatrick, who's the head of she's the commissioner, whatever she is. That's a whole other story. And I saw in that same press conference when the New Orleans mayor got up and said it was a terrorist attack, I thought Ann Kirkpatrick was going to have a heart attack. Did you see that video? She turns around like
didn't say that. Ann Kirkpatrick is the superintendent of police for New Orleans.
Okay.
She and she also does a side gig as an FBI diversity trainer.
Oh, wow. Okay. Good, good, good. These are the kind of people, folks, that are leading us. These are the kinds of people that are in charge. This is why our country is in the mess that it's in. And this is what Donald Trump faces. This overwhelming, it's down in the weeds so deeply that it's going to take all of us to help him turn this around. That's all I can say. But is there anything more about, I want to move to the other terrorist attack at Trump Tower in Las Vegas, because that one's fascinating. But is there anything else about Shamsuda in New Orleans we need to know about?
There's a whole lot, because the FBI and the other authorities have said they are convinced he did not act alone. There are other suspects out there. So they're obviously working on something else, and there is a network. It's just the FBI hasn't been watching them.
It's amazing that they said right away that this was not there. He's acting alone. They said that immediately, like they do always. This is the pattern for them. It's infuriating, Mike.
It shows the lack of discipline within the FBI. If they cannot say objectively, look, this is early in the case. We don't have all the facts. We have a lot of contradicting and incomplete information. We'll provide you the information as we get it. So that briefing clip that you gave, the first part of this segment.
Right.
They obviously brought in a grown-up to give that briefing. He gave a very professional briefing. There are things we know, things we can't say.
Yep. Yeah, he's an expert for hire, I guess, because the real FBI had an earring, a nose ring, and couldn't even speak English well. It was terrible, very embarrassing. But again, that's why we're in the situation that we're in. Well, let's move to Las Vegas, because that's a mystery. This is a Tesla truck, one of Elon Musk's incredible little machines, it blew up 17 seconds after it arrived at the Trump Hotel, International Hotel in Las Vegas. But the truck was so sturdy that nothing was destroyed in Trump Tower, just the driver was killed. Okay, so that brings us to Matthew Leivelsberger, who was the driver, we think, must have been. Talk about it, Mike. It's just so convoluted. Just tell us what you know.
Yeah, well, he has been identified conclusively as that same individual. There's a lot of information out there that's very interesting and very strange, and I don't really want to repeat it because it could lead us down too many paths, and it's too incomplete. But for him to drive up, I mean, look at the symbolism. You're taking a Cybertruck manufactured by Elon Musk's company to blow it up in the doorway of the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas the same day as that jihadist attack in New Orleans. Again, that driver, military background, special forces background, but there are other loose conclusions or lines or dots to connect between him and the jihadist, but they don't necessarily add up to anything. But they don't not add up to anything either. This particular individual, though, was with Special Operations, and those guys are trained to make improvised explosives. But the improvised explosives in that Cybertruck were juvenile. No professional American, Special Ops guy would make explosives like that. So we really don't know or understand why he did what he did, or if there indeed is a connection. I suspect there is some kind of connection, but that's one of these things where we have to pull in a lot more information to get more on the background of the individual. And then also the forensic data from inside the Cybertruck that Tesla has recovered from the vehicle.
Well, now they're reporting, of course, that he was shot in the head before the explosion took place. I mean, has that been verified?
Apparently that is the case. Now, whether he did it himself or then other people are saying that he might have been killed beforehand, and then the truck, because it has auto-drive mode, it can drive autonomously to some degree, it might have been set up. The fact is, we just don't know what the reality is. That's why Tesla had to go to the site to recover the in-cabin cameras, which would have had all the data, all the visuals on everything that had gone on in that cab.
So his family is saying, Leivelsberger, again, who you said is special, I think he was special ops for 17 years, something like that. visited, you know, was a hero in battle. He won awards for his valor. And his uncle is saying, and his family members are saying, that he was a staunch Trump supporter.
Right. Right.
Go ahead, please.
It doesn't add up. It doesn't add up. So that's why I hesitate to draw any conclusions from it. We also don't know what types of other, you know, when people go through crises. His wife had just dumped him. But on the other hand, he was having a good time that day in that truck, or right as soon as he rented it. So there's a lot we need to find out there, but you can't dismiss anything.
His wife had left him? Is that what you just said? Well, I knew the other guy's wife had just left him, but I didn't know that about Matthew. And the wife, Sarah is her name. There are, I don't know if they're still there or not, but her social media posts show that she hated Trump. That's what I'm reading. I read it from more than one source. So who knows what? But it's just weird stuff. I also read, Mike, and I'm sure you've seen this too, that his Signal is a private chat that a lot of people use because it deletes itself and it's not traceable. And so it's a nice way to communicate if you don't want things to be read or discovered by somebody surveilling you. So he was using Signal chat, and somehow his account went down before this happened, or after it happened. Did you read that?
Yeah, that was a group chat that he was in, and so one of the guys in the group chat noticed, because you can see on Signal when you're communicating with somebody that the safety number has changed, and oftentimes that's normal if you change your SIM card. Like if you're deployed in Europe, you might change your SIM card in your phone when you come back to the U.S., and then that would change the safety number of your Signal thing, and everybody on your list will see that it has changed. But in this case, what this guy had posted in the Signal group is that the safety number changed prior to the incident, and then again after the incident, and the name changed from his full name to just the name Matt. So whether or not it's true, or whether or not that can be legitimately explained, we just don't know. I did want to get back, Sandy, to the New Orleans case, because the terrorist there, when the FBI went to his house in Houston, it's a crime scene, right? So, but they left a lot of evidence behind. They left all the doctrinal writings that terrorist had in his possession. But not only that, but a copy of the Quran opened to a page about martyrdom. So that was the last thing he read in his Quran when he left his house to go to kill those people in New Orleans. The FBI is not treating that material as evidence to be sequestered and to be used in an official investigation. It just left it behind for a New York Post reporter to discover.
Well, Mike, they don't know anything. That just shows you their ignorance. I bet they had no idea what they were looking at, had no no clue about, because how would they know? They haven't been trained. Our kids don't learn it in school. They don't learn it in college. Parents don't know to teach them. How would they know? These are, they've come up after 9/11.
They were not trained on purpose, right?
Exactly.
You've got a generation of FBI who have never been trained on this, and that was by design, by the leadership. We're not going to teach them this anymore. When we first met, we at the Center for Security Policy were working with the FBI on a training program for FBI agents and analysts in how to identify jihadist individuals and jihadist groups and how to understand them. And then Robert Mueller shut it down in about 2007.
Yeah, so that are we proud? So I want to get a broader view before, because you have that broad view. You've worked in the world and we've talked so many times. What's the name of your last book? Help me. I forgot to write that down, and I want people to know because it's so good.
It's Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains.
Okay, Big Intel. So Mike's a great writer, just as he's a great talker. And so I really recommend that book to you guys, Big Intel. I want to go to, for a second, just a couple of other side stories quickly. This happened in Toronto just this past weekend. And I want you to listen. This is happening in downtown Toronto. This is clip 10. But that's the sound of Hamas supporters in Toronto. And so that's happening in that street. And meanwhile, in the streets of New York City, marching down the street in Manhattan, the day after this New Orleans attack, you have hundreds and hundreds of Hamas supporters taking over the streets, Mike, and calling for international intifada. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, they're calling for global jihad. This was in response to the October 7th, 2023 Hamas slaughter in Israel, the Sabbath massacre. And right after that, Hamas called for global jihad and global intifada, both intifada being particular to the Palestinians. And what it is for any Hamas supporters or any Palestinian or Arab claiming to identify with Hamas, and any others who wanted to come along, really, they opened up it to anybody, would not just protest against Israel. That's the narrative. They're protesting against whatever Israel's doing. It's protesting in solidarity with Hamas and with the war that Hamas, backed by Iran, was conducting. And it's still conducting. So that's what this event in Toronto, the one in New York, the ones in Europe, elsewhere, are all for this. There's solidarity with Hamas, and this is a very important part of any insurgent military strategy, is to show what they call solidarity presence worldwide, to show that there's worldwide support for what you're doing. It's a huge morale booster to the forces who are doing the killing, and it's a fundraising mechanism. And it's a political prestige mechanism to show that we are on the offensive and our targets globally are on the defensive.
And we are really in trouble. England has been really overrun. So is France, Sweden. We could just go on and on because they allowed their borders just to be opened up and jihadis came, you know, running in down these village streets. So we're finding ourselves in the same situation, and that's why the election of President Trump was so significant, closing the borders, stopping the bleed. We don't know if we can stop this at this point, but that's our goal. It's Mike's goal. It's my goal. It's President Trump's goal. And but hopefully after listening to our conversation, it will make a little bit more sense to you. We just gave you the tip of the iceberg. But remember that Mike's book is called Big Intel. Big Intel. Great book. You won't regret reading it. Mike Waller is with the Center for Security Policy. And Mike, thank you so much for your expertise today. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Some of you are, you know, you have more finances than others. We're not all the same. Some of you are struggling, but others of you still have good resources. And if you have those kinds of resources, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, and that would reach 200 babies and their moms. To donate, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. And just before I play this clip, I want to set it up because not long ago there was Muslim Day at the Texas, I think it was in their state house. And so they were all gathered around and some in their hijabs. And there was a woman at the mic getting ready to speak. And from the crowd runs up this very Texas-looking woman. And she grabs the mic, bends it away from the woman standing at the podium getting ready to, you know, proclaim Muslim Day. And this is what she says. I just wanted you to have the context because here's how it went. Clip 15.
Proclaim the name of the Lord Jesus Christ over the capital of Texas. I stand against Islam and the false prophet Muhammad. Islam will never dominate the United States, and by the grace of God, it will not dominate Texas.
All right, that's enough. Actually, that's enough. That video was produced by Arab. They're laughing at her, but I wanted you to hear that because that took a lot of guts. And I would just say that the only thing that's going to save us from the domination of Islam is Jesus Christ. It's a spiritual warfare of the worst kind, of the darkest kind. For the Muslim Brotherhood, they say, we love death more than they love life. That's what we're dealing with. They wear black, they love death, and they love to create death. The only thing that can be called out against them is courageous Christians calling on the name of Jesus. So I wanted you to hear that because there was that one lady in Texas who did that. Bruce, you've been listening. Pretty fascinating stuff with Mike, right?
Absolutely. And I think it's a stark reminder of what the last 4 years has done to our law enforcement community.
Yes, and it's probably, you know, gut-wrenching for you to hear that FBI agent not even be able to string sentences together. She's not supposed to even wear a ring, right, in her official capacity, in her nose?
No, that's not what an FBI agent is supposed to appear as. And I can look past that. I'm looking more at the substance of things. And as Mike said, you could tell immediately that Althea Duncan had no idea what a terrorism case is. As he said, she's a healthcare expert. And it's really sad that if she was the choice as the assistant special agent in charge in New Orleans, that she was the choice to speak over the special agent in charge, who is the absolute boss in New Orleans, then he must really be a piece of work.
And it's just sad. We've been watching this together for the last 20 years. We saw that start to happen in D.C. with the FBI. Remember that shooting of the Republicans at the ball field in Alexandria? And the FBI got up to make a statement and made it sound like it was just he was having a bad time at home. Yeah. It was not a terrorist act. We remember that. We watched it together.
Well, and as Mike reminded us, when Nidal Hassan killed those people, the soldiers at Fort Hood, Obama as president referred to it as workplace violence.
Yes, and I would just add on a personal note, you and I were in the airport in Turkey when that came. Of course, everything was in Turkish. We were waiting for our flight. And we were over the moon with rage and the inability to do anything, to say anything. We were there on a trip, so it was not a vacation. It was a work trip. But I'll never forget that as long as I live. Workplace violence, when the doctor from the Army got up on that table and shot all those innocent, I think it was like, I want to say 13, something like that. It was horrible.
Well, you know, this case in Las Vegas, I think, is going to be interesting as to what what is determined to have driven this active duty soldier to have driven this car up there. And with the gunshot wound to the head, now somebody could have done it themselves and have what they call a dead man switch, a detonator, where if you don't hold down a button, if you shoot yourself and your thumb releases the button, it allows the explosives to go off. But this theory of, this vehicle, this Cybertruck, has autopilot. Was this a setup? I don't know. We need to get to the bottom of it, though, because things are not really adding up right
now.
Doesn't
add up. And just that the explosives were so rudimentary when he was an expert in explosives.
Right.
It's just craziness. Well, all right, honey, thank you for joining me to talk about that. And I hope that you, if you can possibly enjoy such a thing, I hope you learn something. We'll be watching all of us to see what develops in the next few days. I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan, because you can put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy, or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening, as dreadful as the information was, to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.